JoeDanMedia.com.
It's Friday. The people murdered at Benghazi are still dead, and the Obama administration has not yet been held accountable. Navy SEALs Glenn Doherty and Tyrone Woods gave their lives fighting to save Americans on that horrible day. Americans who would probably be safe and with their families today if the White House had answered their calls for help. Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton both heard those calls for emergency rescue, and both of them ignored it. In fact, there is evidence that they may have actually assisted the murderous terrorists by shutting down rescue efforts. Hillary, you made a political commercial a few years ago about your ability to handle emergencies when that 3 a.m. phone call comes. Well, now America knows exactly how you handle emergencies. And as an American, I can honestly say that if I ever have to call for help, you are the last person I want to hear on the other end. Well, I'm taking the suggestion of Colin McGroarty, who suggests that until there is justice for Benghazi, that Americans who care wear black on Friday. Black Friday for Benghazi justice. Special Operations Speaks is still on the case, and just because media attention has died down does not mean that progress has stopped. There is no statute of limitations on murder. Those who are guilty cannot hide behind a dishonest left-wing media forever. There will be justice sooner or later. And hey, Hillary, you once promised endless investigations into the Bush administration. Well, guess what's coming to haunt you? This is Wild Bill for America. Thank you for watching, and America, bless God again.
And amen to that. Indeed. Until there is justice for Benghazi, I hope you all are wearing your black today, and I also hope you're wearing a little bit of red for our troops until they come home. As you know, that was Wild Bill for America. You just heard this man needs very little introduction, but I'm going to give you a brief one anyway. Now, Bill, he grew up in the Colorado Rockies and had a successful career in law enforcement, serving both as a deputy sheriff and a deputy U.S. Marshal. He is a graduate of the Colorado Law Enforcement Academy, the Federal Law Enforcement Academy, and the U.S. Marshals Academy. Prior to law enforcement, Bill served with the U.S. Marines as a corpsman. In 2000, Bill headed off to Montana Bible College and then served on the mission field in Haiti, the Dominican Republic, Honduras, and West Africa. He has absolute confidence in God, his Son, Jesus Christ, and his written word, the Bible. As a security specialist, Bill has tackled Islamic violence and intimidation head-on, recruiting and training security teams to protect missionaries serving around the world. Having studied Islam intensely and seen how it operates firsthand, Bill is well qualified to speak out about the dangers this religion presents. As one of the first Tea Party members, Bill continues his policy of speaking the truth boldly and encouraging others to do the same. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I bring on Wild Bill for America. Bill, hello.
Hey there. How's things going up in Canada?
Oh, it's not too bad. Sunshine and roses. It's always wonderful up here in Canada. And you're still not getting a California. No, you're still not getting a British Columbia.
Man, did you tell your audience about the wonderful offer I made you? I offered to trade I am willing to trade California straight across for British Columbia. Come on, man. That's a good deal. British Columbia is just a bunch of trees. I'm willing to give you Los Angeles, the world's capital of pornography. I'm willing to give you San Francisco, the world capital of other things. And I'll even throw in Disneyland. Come on, man. How can you turn down such an offer?
You know what? I'll tell you what. If I give you British Columbia and I take on California, you also get the East End Vancouver. So I'll tell you what. I'll give you that part of British Columbia, but I'll take the Californian beaches. How's that?
Oh, yeah, the California beaches.
Not sounding as good now, huh?
Well, yeah, but you also
no, but you
have
know
to
what? I'm still open to the 99-year lease part. As long as we can open the border and I can at least go to, I don't know, Ventura Beach, that would be all right. I wouldn't mind that at all, Bill. I think that's a fair trade.
Oh, La Jolla is a great beach, but you have to take Nancy Pelosi with it. That's probably a deal breaker right there. We'll continue to negotiate, and who knows? We just might get beautiful British Columbia yet.
Nancy Pelosi in a bathing suit. Oh, my, I just, I need an eye wash desperately. Big time.
Hey,
no,
yeah.
Thank you. No, there are so many jokes I could make about her, but this is prime time and people are trying to eat their supper.
That's for sure.
But, hey, it is great to have you on the show. And before I forget, Tom Trento and Joe Dan Media, they both said to say hello to you.
Oh, good. They're both good friends and very respected Americans. If we had 10,000 just like those guys, we could clean up every problem that North America is facing.
Oh, I'm telling you, like I was talking with Tom Trento about the United West and the Clarion Project and all the work that all those fine folks are doing out there to fight this scourge that we're facing in the West right now. And what a wealth of knowledge these people are. It's an honor to know them and to be able to speak with them and pick their brains and ask them what is going on, what can we do. But I played that clip at the very beginning, and that was you and Benghazi Black Fridays. And to just to let you know, because of you, sir, I went out and I bought myself a black and red T-shirt, which I wear every Friday now, because I wear black for Benghazi until justice is served, and I wear red to honor our troops until they all come home. So I want to thank you for that. I have been spreading the word out there, telling people everywhere, this is what you got to do. This is until justice is served and until the troops come home. So I thank you for that, Bill. That is fantastic. Now, seem rather knowledgeable about the Benghazi affair. I have been on this forever, from day one, ever since Barack Hussein Obama came out in the Rose Garden, and he made that vague statement that terrorism will not defeat the West. Well, that was pretty general, don't you think? He did not specifically address Benghazi, didn't he?
Well, no. It's hard to tell when Obama talks about terrorism if he's speaking of somewhere in the Middle East or if he's talking about the latest Tea Party rally of Bible-believing Americans who love their country.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And did you have a chance to listen to the CNN, the truth about Benghazi? And
no, actually, Cal, I threw my TV out years ago, and I'm much happier now.
You know what? I didn't watch it either. As a matter of fact, I haven't watched TV since the November elections, but I was fortunate enough to listen to Gotti Edelman on his program, American Akbar, mm-hmm. and he discussed it, and he broke it down for us, and he was wonderful. If it weren't for Gotti Edelman, I would not have figured out that CNN was so far off the mark. Like, for example, they were interviewing Chris Stevens' father, and they were asking him, well, why was Chris Stevens there? And the father was saying that he was just rooting out who the rebels were, but they did not bring up any mention of the gun running, the money supplies for the Libyan rebels, nothing like that. There is so much about this Benghazi issue that I'm wondering if we'll ever uncover the entire truth. And do you think that we will? Because they're shutting up the CIA agents left, right, and center as well.
Well, they're trying to, but you got to remember that they got some of our own killed in this operation. And I have some good friends that are Navy SEALs, retired Navy SEALs. One is Captain Larry Bailey. He used to command the Navy SEAL Training Center in California. And I've been traveling with Larry around the country, speaking and interviewing people. And these Navy SEALs are up in arms. They are on this Benghazi thing like pit bulls on pork chops. They are not going to give up. I think the Obama administration has finally bit off more than they can chew. You know, they've gotten away with so much over the last 4 or 5 years. The gun running to the Mexican drug lords, I'm sure, gave them confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're trying to run guns to the Middle East, where they are bound to fall into the hands of people who will eventually turn those weapons on Israel and the USA. I have some serious concerns there. And I just thank God that people like you are speaking out on the Internet. And did you know that for the first time this year, digital media is going to bypass television for listenership and viewership? The Internet is taking over. You and I are really making a difference by taking a stand through the digital media.
We absolutely are. And this is what I say to everybody, and I especially espouse this to the Islamist listen up, it's the Internet that is going to be our revolution. And I, when I'm discussing the issues of Islam, I always do include that Islam, you can no longer hide. You can't hide from us, because we're on to you. We know what you're all about. We know what you're up to. And for sure, I think Benghazi as well. People are digging way, way, way too deep into this, and people are not letting it go. Like, I'm a little bulldog on it. You're a bulldog on it. And neither one of us is going to give up. We're not going to give up until we get to the bottom of what exactly is going on. And I'm determined. I always talk about Benghazi, and I'm always looking for new avenues of information to find out what exactly did go on. There are so many questions here. And like I say, when Gotti Edelman was discussing this on his program, he found so many holes in the CNN report, the truth about Benghazi.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hardly. There's a lot of questions that It just led to, I think CNN, they just led us to more questions. For example, why was Hillary Clinton, how was she responsible for sending Chris Stevens to Libya a year before he became an ambassador? Because she's not CIA. That would not be her repertoire of responsibility to do that. He wasn't an ambassador back then. Why was she sending him over there? Good question. I like that one. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're listening to Gotti Edelman. I know Gotti, and there is nobody that I consider to be more knowledgeable about Islam and the tentacles that it is spreading around the world. So, yeah, keep Gotti Edelman on your radar. You're going to be hearing a lot more from him in the near future.
Oh, absolutely, and he's actually also he's a very fine man, a very fine friend. If I have any questions, I just go to him, and he's right there to respond, and he's definitely on to this Benghazi business as well, you betcha. Well, he has his show every Thursday night here on Block Talk Radio, too, at 8 p.m., so I pretty much have my front row seat every Thursday to see what God he's got to say this week. But like I say, he had such a fantastic show last week. I was practically sitting here and I'm listening to him and I'm pausing him because I'm typing out on my Word his points, and then I'm resuming play, and then I'm pausing him and typing out like crazy. He opened up and he had his rebuttals about it too. I really liked, too, that when he was breaking down this truth about Benghazi, he brought up so many salient points. For example, the USA, first they opened up a cultural center, then it's a special missions compound, then it's a consulate, the same building. They didn't even know what to call it. What exactly was this place? What was it supposed to be? What was the focus of this building? What was it supposed to represent? And was it the cultural center aspect of it? Okay. Yeah, a cultural center. Isn't that what that imam wanted to call the Victory Mosque in New York City?
I believe you're right. Yeah, good point. I hadn't thought about that. Now, now are you taking calls on this show?
Ladies and gentlemen, just to let you know that Wild Bill will be taking your calls right here on the program. I have them for the duration of the program, and you can call in either at 347-237-4318, or you can hit the little old skippity Skype button at the top of the show page. And if you do want to talk, please press 1 on your device so I know that you want to come on the air. Otherwise, I will assume that you're just listening on other devices. So there you go.
Well, good, because I invited one of my Internet opponents to join us tonight, a guy by the name of Greg. And he started a website, I think last week, called WildBillForAmericaSucks.com. And so I was so proud to finally be honored with that. I posted it all over Facebook, and I sent it out to all my friends. And so I got to talking to Greg, and you know, he and I had some go-arounds on the YouTube channel, but he seems like a decent guy, and he actually said that he would take the site down if it bothered me, but I said, no, let's have a little fun with it. Let's get some honest debate going. So you might be getting a call from Greg. I think he's up in New York. So if he wants to come on, make sure you give him a chance to talk, okay?
Oh, I absolutely will do that. And if he's up in the New York area, I'll look for a 212 area code or thereabouts, as it were. Mm-hmm. I love debate. I encourage people, if you have opposing opinions, all the better, because there's nothing more than I like than a healthy, honest debate. And I encourage people, too, that when you debate, don't run towards ad hominems, because you lose the argument every time, and you lose my interest, and you'll lose Bill's interest as well. If you have an opposing opinion, we'd love to hear it, but keep it clean and keep it coherent, and stick to your guns, make your point, and we will have a good old discussion about that. So, and like I say, please do call in, because believe me, Wild Bill is a busy, busy man. I'm lucky that I was able to pin him down this evening to join me on the show. Now, I was reading your bio here, and very fascinating stuff here. You're very well educated. You're very well educated in Islam. I always ask my guests this: what was your wake-up call to Islam? A lot of people say, well, it was 9/11. For me, that as well, that was for me. a lot of people say that, well, I don't know. As a traveler, I just came across Islam in the Middle East, and I saw what Sharia law was all about. But for you, Bill, what was your wake-up call that you knew that the scourge of Islam was dangerous to the West?
Well, of course, 9/11 was a wake-up call to the entire world, and it that planted a seed in a lot of people. But I eventually became head of security for a medical mission group that worked in West Africa and areas where Islam is dominant. So I got out the books, and I started studying. I started reading, and I was absolutely stunned at what I found, you know, the philosophy, the religious mandates of this religion, and how it is consistently advancing an anti-freedom, slavery, violent agenda around the world. Country after country after country for hundreds of years have been falling to the exact same tactics. And I was just blown away, especially when I see those tactics beginning to be executed in North America, USA, and Canada. Whenever I say I'm Wild Bill for America, I include Canada in that because we're all in this together.
And you're very fond of the English Defense League as well, and you have made videos in defense of them as well.
Yes, they
you're a big hit over there. You're a big hit in England. They know who you are. You're the Pat Condell of North America to them. That's high praise.
Yeah, I don't think I have near the talent that Pat Condell has, but I do stand with the EDL. I know what it's like to take a stand for your country only to find yourselves absolutely crucified by the left-wing media as racist and bigots and ignorant hate mongers. I have experienced that from day one when I first began to speak out for God and country. And those men over in the English Defense League, men and women, they march side by side. And yeah, there's a few roughnecks there. There's those rugby players with their broken noses, and they drink their beer, and they might get a little loud sometimes. But you know what? When the Muslims come kicking in doors, do you want them on your side, or do you want these panty-waist politicians who will be hiding under their desks in terror? I'll take the EDL any day over these whiny, wimpy politicians who have no spine.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. And we do. The thing is that England, they have they're dealing with David Cameron, and he's quite the dimmy prime minister that they have over there. Right after that soldier was slaughtered in the street, what did he do? He came out and said, "This is not about Islam." Well, one of the slaughterers went right up to a camera and said, yes, this is about Islam. But David Cameron, he still had to deny the fact that Lee Rigby was just a random attack by a madman, when we know for a fact that was not the case. We know what this Islamist was doing. He told us what he was doing. He told us why he was doing it. And David Cameron still denied it. This is the sort of thing that England is dealing with.
Absolutely. I was on a panel a few months ago, and we were all asked, what is the greatest danger that Islam poses to America? And my answer was, Islam has a great talent for finding useful idiots to promote their propaganda. Cameron is a perfect example of that. And, you know, I can't help but think of Winston Churchill when he said that appeasement is merely feeding the crocodile in hopes that it will eat you last. And that is exactly what the liberal politicians of England are doing by bowing down and capitulating to Islam. They're inviting the beast into their yard, and as far as I can tell, only the English Defense League has the courage to stand up and say, look out, this is bad. Oh, and by the way, there's also an Australian Defense League, a Norway Defense League, and I think a Swedish Defense League now, too. Did I lose you? Hello?
Hi. It would appear that Blog Talk Radio dropped my call, so I had to call back in. Oh, Bill, I'm really sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. I was on my soapbox right up until about 5 seconds ago. Yeah.
Right on. Oh, fantastic. Okay. I'm hearing some clicking, and I'm going, oh no, I'm going to lose Wild Bill. And then I look up on the switchboard, and guess what? Yours truly was dropped. So, oh well, that's what happens, guys. You get live radio. You get it all right here, warts and all. But yes, mm-hmm. Yeah, we were talking. Yes, and what you were saying is so totally correct. That I think I can't remember who coined that term, useful idiots, but Islam certainly has jumped on it, and they certainly have their fair share of them via politicians in particular, don't they?
Yeah, I think it was Joseph Stalin that called them useful idiots. I'm not sure, though. But he certainly knew how to find them himself. And well, that is the problem, Kel, is that we have got way too many useful idiots in high places in government. And, you know, this Benghazi thing, I was just talking with Captain Bailey a few minutes before coming on the show here, and the latest news coming out of that is that Valerie Jarrett, an Obama advisor, is supposedly the one that gave the stand-down order to stop the rescue mm-hmm. efforts of the Benghazi victims. And I was looking at her history, and she was born in Iran, flag number one. She's a Michigan-trained lawyer, flag number two. She's a Marxist. And I got to looking at the Obama administration and the people that they have put in high places, intentionally placing devout Muslims in sensitive positions of national security, intentionally placing Kevin Jennings, a radical homosexual, in charge of safe schools, you know, and it just goes on and on and on. Obama has been literally giving America the finger with his political appointments, and the entire Obama administration is the poster children for useful idiots. I'm not sure what's going to happen here, but it's going to be exciting.
And Keith Ellison and Eric Holder, Keith Ellison in particular, he made it quite clear that he's a devout Muslim, and he was the first politician, I believe, in the higher echelons of the administration, the White House administration, to take his oath on the Quran. And I can't say Holy Quran because it was not a Holy Quran because it was not written in Arabic. So it was just a Quran, and it was actually Thomas Jefferson's copy of the Quran that he swore his oath on. That made me ill when I read that. And the thing is that Barack Hussein Obama running around bragging about one of my favorite historical presidents, that being Thomas Jefferson, how he boasts that Thomas Jefferson hosted the first iftar dinner. Well, that's a bald-faced lie.
No.
Obama is rewriting history, isn't he?
Oh, that's one of the primary playing cards of the liberal left. If you don't like the way things happen, just lie about it. Yeah, I seem to have skipped over the fact that Thomas Jefferson had that Quran because he was fighting the pirates of Tripoli and he wanted to understand his enemy. Yeah.
Exactly. Thus, we got the Marines.
From Hall de Montezuma to the
shores of Tripoli.
Yes,
you better believe it. You guys are leathernecks, that's for sure. And a lot of people want to know, well, where did that term leatherneck come from? Well, it was because the Barbary Pirates, their methodology of slaughter was to try to decapitate the enemy. So they had these very stiff, very thick leather collars to protect their necks from having their heads roll off.
Protection from Muslim blades, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've seen some YouTube videos of some people who should have had leather around their necks when the Muslims caught them too.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm telling you. The methodology of Islam, I really don't even consider it a religion. I consider it a cult. It's a brainwashing cult, in that their methodology of hate knows no bounds, and the levels of cruelty that they can sink to just leaves me gobsmacked some days. If it weren't for my determination to eradicate this scourge, I'd probably have given up, but I can't give up. I got to keep going with this, and that includes being exposed to They're absolute atrocities. What they did, and like I say, I'm just referring back to Benghazi, what they did to Christopher Stevenson in the sodomizing and the torturing of him before they finally murdered him was unbelievable. What they did to the Navy SEALs, Glenn Doherty and Tyrone Woods, what they did to them, what they did to Sean Smith, it is absolutely barbaric. And for people like Hillary Clinton at the hearings to say, well, you know, we don't know what was going on. Were they out for a walk and decided to kill some Americans? What does it matter anyway? I was reading that. What does it matter? It matters to us, Hillary Clinton. It matters to us, the citizens. We are global citizens, and we want answers about what exactly happened. Why the stand-down order by Valerie Jarrett? There were three teams deployed. They were deployed from Croatia and Spain and Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Why were they told to stand back? Why were they told to step off? Why did it take them over 20 hours just to reach a staging area? And why was the special ops in Tripoli told not to go? This is what we want answers to, Hillary Clinton, and you have got to provide them. You cannot sit there in a hearing and tell us that it doesn't matter. What does it matter? Right, Bill?
Whoops, sorry, I had myself muted. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and Hillary Clinton is no dummy, and in all the years that she has been in office, when this Benghazi thing hit, was the first time I ever saw Hillary Clinton run and hide. Remember where she could not be found for days and days, and they finally said, oh, she slipped and hit her head. She had a concussion.
Yeah.
She couldn't talk, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I think Hillary went underground because she knew that the pin had been pulled from the hand grenade, and now they are definitely going to have to answer for it. Oh, Hillary was undermining the security at that compound for a long time before the attack happened. She turned down Stevens' request for additional security several times. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of evidence there for these people to stand trial. I honestly believe they need to stand trial. And because this affected the military, I'm telling you, the U.S. military is fed up with Barack Obama and all of the policies that have come down from his administration. You know, I have been traveling and speaking to and with high-ranking retired military officers. And don't let anybody tell you that the military is on Obama's side. With what he has done to the U.S. military, things are red hot around the world. Trust me.
Oh, absolutely. And they're saying that, Christopher Stevens, he was asking for extra security for the longest time. There were a lot of red flags that the security was needed. You know, like Britain, the Red Cross, the UN, they were shutting down their outposts before the disaster. This was a disaster waiting to happen. All the signs were there. If Britain, the Red Cross, and the UN are shutting down their outposts, then there is something going on. The United States government should have been aware of that. And, of course, this was the compound that was attacked. It wasn't the embassy, per se. But with all the Islamic attacks against American embassies, the history of the attacks, and for an ambassador to call in distress, we need help. And for him to say to one of his aides, he said, Greg, we're under attack. And they did not know what to do. I wonder if they thought right to the bitter end that help was coming and that they would indeed be saved, but nobody came. Nobody came at all. They died horrific deaths. All, and this is Hillary Clinton's and Barack Hussein Obama's to own. They have the blood on their hands for this. Something, too, Bill, that really annoyed me was Aaron Burnett, when he said that the political firestorm in the aftermath was bigger than the attack itself. Well, tell that to the families of the victims of Benghazi, Aaron Burnett. That just threw me as well. Like the total audacity of some of these people is unreal.
Yeah, and Mr. Obama saying that our attempt to turn the Benghazi incident into a scandal has failed. I think dead bodies are definitely a scandal, and this is not going to go away. I see this as the greatest presidential crime in American history, committed by probably the most lawless president in American history. For years, Kel, I have been saying asking myself, how low can they go? And they just keep surprising me over and over and over. The Benghazi thing was, I'm just praying that that is the bottom of the barrel, that they can't go any lower than that. But nothing surprises me anymore. Nothing surprises
me with this, not with this administration. And there's a crucial by-election coming up in 2014, people. We got to do something about that, because what happens in America happens to the rest of us globally. Canada has been watching very intently the moves that Barack Hussein Obama makes. And I really love saying Barack Hussein Obama, just to remind people that he was born of a Muslim father. He was raised in Kenya. Was it Kenya? Ah, oh, boy.
Yeah,
I'm losing my mind here.
Supposedly born in Kenya. Yeah.
Yeah, and he has an Islamic name. Now, a lot of people say, "Well, he's a Muslim." I don't know if he's a Muslim or not. I don't think he's a Christian. If anything, he may be an atheist. But I don't know what he is. But I know what he's not, and that is a Christian. He is not a Christian, and he lies to us. And he belies our faith, and he ridicules our faith every time he invokes the word of God in any of his speeches, in anything he says, because I look at him and I think to myself, you are a liar. Don't you even try to snowball us that you are a Christian, because we know that is one thing for sure, that you're not.
Yeah. I'd say his religion is that he is a devoted opportunist.
Oh, absolutely. He's a narcissist, and he's absolutely in it for the power. He absolutely just he loves this, and he knows what he's doing. A lot of people say he's either the most calculated man on the planet or he's the most inept man on the planet. I don't think he's inept at all. I think he knows exactly what he's doing, and now he wants to mess around with the peoples of Egypt. This man just cannot keep himself away from anything remotely. The stench of Islam is like perfume to him. He cannot stay away from it. Look what he's doing with the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood, they were banned in Egypt for years and years and years. And what did it accomplish, getting Morsi thrown out and installing the Muslim Brotherhood? What did that accomplish? And now he seems determined that the Muslim Brotherhood will be reseated in Egypt again. He's making noises about sending ground troops over there.
Oh, he just keeps pushing buttons. Barack Obama says that the most beautiful sound in the world is the Muslim call to prayer, but I disagree.
Gosh.
I think the most beautiful sound is the sound of liberals screaming like chimpanzees, and I love doing videos that make them do exactly that, and we're going to keep after them. We're going to keep after them.
And we do have we have a caller here, and I believe they want to have a word with you. I'll bring them on right now for you, Bill. He's been holding very patiently. And 516, welcome to Red Fox Blogger with Cal Fritzy and my guest Wild Bill. What's your name and what's your comment?
Hey,
or
Bill,
question.
This is Greg. Hey, Bill.
Hi,
hey, Greg. How are you?
Very
hey,
well.
Greg,
how are
doing
you?
Good. Good to finally talk to you.
I'm trying to press one for a while. I've been on, but you aren't getting the message for some reason.
No, I know. And you know what? Your call would appear, and then it would disappear, and then it would appear again. So, Greg, my deepest apologies. My studio is acting very naughty tonight.
No, don't apologize. Don't apologize. That's fine.
Thanks.
So, I oppose you guys a little bit. Of course, Benghazi is a horrible thing that happened, and people died. And there's no excuse for it. And someone in the State Department and our security failed on a big way, and this has to be brought to justice. But to just suggest that our president murdered people intentionally is just ridiculous. That's not what this country's about. And as much as I disagree with Obama, I don't think he's a murderer intentionally. Do you actually think that he told people to stand down to let Americans die?
Well, Greg, I spent 20 years as a law enforcement officer investigating crime and looking at the motives for things. And when you look at the totality of the circumstances, what you have is Americans under attack. You have rescue elements from four different sources ready to pounce and rescue these people. You have a direct order from high rank, from somewhere in the White House, to stop all rescue efforts, and a general and an admiral who were putting together the rescue efforts were relieved of duty. Now, that, so we have the actual incident. Now we have to look at motive. And now it's coming out that the possible motive is that they had a gun-running operation going, that how many was it, 1,000 surface-to-air missiles had been lost through this operation, missiles that can bring down American airliners. Yeah, we have not only the crime, but we also have the motive and the opportunity. And if these people in the White House shut this down in order to eliminate the witnesses, then that is murder.
Well, obviously, of course, that's murder. But that's a really, out there thing. I mean, you have to really get some substantial proof to really make an allegation like that. That is a very strong allegation you're making right there.
Well, and it deserves to be investigated, and that is what the battle is trying to get this opened up, to get the administration to provide the documents that Congress needs to investigate, and it's being stonewalled, and that is another suspicious activity.
And agreed, and that should be pursued. And I'm not saying things shouldn't be pursued, but to jump to conclusions automatically, at least we have to get an honest investigation to find out what happened.
I agree.
And do you know how Chris Stevens died? Do you know how what his cause of death was?
I know it was not smoke inhalation.
No? What was it?
Well, they say that he died of smoke inhalation at the compound, but we have photographs of him being carried by his sodomizers through the streets, and in one photograph he is seen raising his hand to his face, so he was obviously alive when he was being carried away. So
that's
he
right.
did not
he
die
was
of smoke inhalation. Yeah,
he
yeah.
died of asphyxiation, not smoke inhalation. Asphyxiation caused by smoke inhalation about 45 minutes after it took place, and he was alive for that walk. I agree with that.
Do you know how they were trying to spin that photo? They were trying to make that photo out to be that he was being rescued and taken to the hospital, where we know that's
I don't know. I wasn't there, so I don't really know. We only know what fed to us.
This is the official spin. It was at one point until it was seen through that these captors who ultimately murdered Christopher Stevens, they tried to make out that they were actually bystanders that were trying to rescue him and get him to a hospital.
Well, so the people that brought him to the hospital were the one who killed him?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're saying?
No, they weren't taking him anywhere. They were taking him out with the intention of murdering him. They weren't taking him to any hospital.
But he was at a hospital, right? Or he never was?
I don't know. Was he? I think.
Okay.
He eventually ended up somewhere in the end. Of course, I mean his body wasn't left in the street. Of course, but he was not being rescued. He was being carried out to be murdered. That is the bottom line.
Right. So you don't fully know what happened, and we all don't fully know what happened.
And this is why we're doing the show is to find out exactly what the truth is, because we're not getting the truth, Greg. We're not getting answers at all. Like the CNN report that I listened to Gotti Edelman on it, and he broke it down for me. He saved me the headache of having to look at these hapless, idiotic talking heads who didn't know what they were talking about themselves. They were correcting themselves. They were talking over themselves. They were saying three different things.
It's true.
They were calling this
compound three
different things. It was just
I agree
insanity.
With that. And these talking heads that you see on CNN or any of these channels, even Fox, all they are talking heads. That really are just taking the same information that's available to anybody else and trying to draw conclusions to it. So until they get a real investigation, it's not fair for any of us to make assumptions because we don't really know, you know. And we're all sucked into TV, and we're going to sit there and try to support a decision that we think that supports our argument, you know. And that's not really getting to the truth on either side. I'm not taking left or right. You know, stance. I'm saying either side. We have to be a fair.
Okay,
and
Greg. So I have a question for you. What do you suppose we do? Just be quiet and let the investigation take on a life of its own without any interference from a citizen journalist such as myself
no.
and Bill?
Absolutely no. You guys go out there and make noise and demand a valid investigation, but don't jump to conclusions saying that we have murderers and we don't know who the murderers are.
See, the whole thing is subjective, and of course our
subjective. I agree.
Where we're not, I don't think we're concluding as much, but we are coming to opinions about what we think is going on. And I think that Obama and Hillary Clinton owned this. I think that they set up Chris Stevens, Sean Smith, Glenn Doherty, and Tyrone Woods for murder. I do believe that they were calculated in their moves. For goodness sake, Obama got bored and went to bed after a couple of hours.
Well, actually, I think he went on a plane to Vegas to didn't he go to Vegas that night for a fundraiser?
I think it was the next morning or something that he took off.
Was that he went to Vegas for a fundraiser.
Yeah, he went to Vegas within the next 24 hours, that I know, yeah.
I think it was actually that night, but I could be wrong. But it was that close, so absolutely. He didn't stop what he was doing, and maybe he should have. You know, that's definitely true. But, you know, Bill, you still there?
Oh, I'm still here. Yeah, I'm enjoying the conversation.
You know, and Bill, some of this Islam stuff, just to give you a point of view, a lot of this old-school Islam stuff is being, the younger generation is seeing that these ideologies don't work and are ridiculous, and they're rebelling. And look what's happening in Egypt. They're trying to throw out the Muslim Brotherhood. Young Muslims are starting to see, they're getting exposed to Western culture by Twitter and Facebook and Internet, and they're starting to see communication. And it's going to be a very long process. It's not there. But some of these younger generations are not falling into these ideologies that breed all this violence and all this other stuff that you talk about.
I am very hopeful that you are correct on that, Greg. And I do know that the young people of Iran have a great passion for American values. You know, we had a great relationship with Iran for many years. And you're right, the Internet, the music, movies and stuff is definitely affecting them. So, you know, I certainly don't broad brush Muslims as terrorists. I'm always accused of saying all Muslims are terrorists, and I've never said that. The problem lies with Islam itself, because it is basically written in stone and is unchangeable. And some of their laws are just absolutely incompatible with modern civilization.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. And some of these people are born into being Muslim descent. And, you know, they're starting to realize that, but it's not going to be an overnight thing. And a lot of times the way you come off is that you brush stroke, just like you said. What you try not to do is what you do. And maybe you're trying to be direct with your audience and get a roar out of them. But, you know, you got to realize not every person of Muslim descent in this world is a bad person.
Oh, absolutely not. There's a Muslim guy here in Daytona that I met on a bus a while back. His name is Haroom, and he's trying to find work, and I'm trying to help him find work.
Yep.
It's kind of hard because he absolutely will not work any place that sells alcohol or pork or things
I know,
like
I
that.
I saw your video on that. That was a fun video.
And, you know, as long as Haroom is, you know, willing to talk, you know, and be a good neighbor, he'll have my friendship. But, man, if he ever turns radical on us, he'll find my wrath.
Of course.
So, yeah.
And the only thing is, you know, I grew up in New York, which is a liberal state. I know you're probably writing me off to be a liberal, where I really have a lot of – I'm a lot more middle of the road than you people can realize. I vote Republican mostly all of the time. And, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. I don't believe in government handouts. I don't believe in welfare and all this stuff. So I don't know. You can call me and brand me whatever you want. But I grew up and I saw a lot of, you know, very multicultural. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, very multicultural. And I saw all people from all kinds of people from different walks of life, and Muslims too, that went to mosque. But you know what? They were peaceful. They did their little prayers, and they went home, and they Americanized. I watched them. I'd watch them move in, and I'd watch them 5 to 10 years later Americanize and really step away from those values.
Well, I have a question for you, too. These are so-called moderate Muslims that are assimilating into Western society, yet they're attending their mosques. And they're obviously devout Muslims, which means that they are following the Quran. And if you read what is in the Quran, and I'm sure, Greg, you have because you're a smart fella, the Quran is full of the hadiths and the surahs about smiting the enemy, killing the enemy, and world caliphate.
Yes.
How can they be moderate if they follow a book like that, if they follow the teachings of Muhammad?
Because I agree with you, and they're starting to live in society, and you're just seeing that that doesn't work, and that's just ridiculous. They have neighbors that take care of them, and they help their neighbors, and they're saying, but yet they have their roots. So they're confused. You're right. They have this one book telling them this thing. They're living life one way. They don't want to totally just give up their culture, and they're in a strange place. You're absolutely right.
I have a very interesting observation from my chat room, and this comes from Green Dog, and he says that being a moderate Muslim is their highest crime because they're engaging in apostasy if they don't follow the letter of the law of the Quran.
You're right. So that's what they're doing. Is every Christian a perfect Christian who goes to church every Sunday and does every – is every Catholic person perfect? Is every Jew perfect? No. No, they're not. Neither is every Muslim. It's the same thing. They're humans just like us. And when you take them out of this world where there's no communication and they're stopped and you stop that brainwashing and they start to see it, some of them don't come out of it and stay radicalized, and some come out of it.
Well, there seems to be a consistent pattern in Muslim populations, and it has to do with percentages. When Muslims are less than 2% of the population, they are excellent neighbors and friends, and there is absolutely no problem.
Mm-hmm.
But country after country after country has seen that when the Muslim population gets between 4 and 6%, all of a sudden they start making demands for halal foods in the stores and special treatment, church bells to be silenced and so on. And when it hits about 8 to 10%, that is when they begin demanding to have their little Sharia courts to handle their Muslim affairs in their neighborhoods. And that's when Jewish synagogues start being vandalized and threats are made.
Well,
and when it hits 12%, Greg, that is when open violence becomes common in the streets with demands that the infidels be silenced. And this is, we have seen this in nation after nation for hundreds of years. Islam has a consistent pattern that it follows. And right now in the USA, we're still at about 2%, except for Michigan.
I could tell you one thing, Bill, and then I have to close on this. My wife's calling me to be with the kids, so I just didn't want to get to talk to you. But anyway, I could tell you this. Growing in Brooklyn, there were definitely neighborhoods that had over 12% Muslims. But I obviously didn't. They had their own neighborhoods, but they didn't. Or Brooklyn overall, obviously, there were a small percentage. But I guarantee you, if they ever started that crap in Brooklyn, there were enough Brooklyn street guys that would not allow anything like that to happen. I never saw any demands like that. But if what you're saying is true, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I agree with that. That's,
well,
that's
hey, Greg, I know you have to go, and I really appreciate your calling. But before I do, I just want to ask you one final question, and that is,
okay,
are you paying attention to what's happening in England in particular right now? What's happening with the sex grooming gangs and the Islamic no-go zones? Have you viewed any of the videos about people walking down the street with a bottle of wine and being told to get the hell out? This is in Islamic. This is a Sharia-controlled area. Do you think that can happen in the United States if we don't keep on top of it right now? You don't think we can follow down the same path?
I don't. And if England lets that happen, there's something wrong with them. They have to stop that behavior right away. And I think if they tried it, it would be stopped real quick here. But
Do you support the English Defense League? Yeah. What the English Defense League is trying to do that, and they're being absolutely turned into nothing more than a hate group by the demi politicians and the sleeping public. The English Defense League is trying to do something about it. Their statement is that they are not violent. They're not racist. They're not violent, but they're no longer silent. They're trying to make a difference in England, and every time they turn around, they're getting crucified by the politicians, i.e. David Cameron. You were listening to the beginning of the show when I brought him up about what he had to say about this is not an issue of Islam. This is what England is dealing with. I do not want to see this in North America. And if we do not keep on top of it, it will happen.
All right, let me cut you off, but I do have to go, and I agree with what you're saying, by the way. And, Bill, I just wanted to say it was great talking to you. Bill, it was great talking to you. Although we disagree at times, I have respect for you as a man, and I hope that we get to debate again in the future.
Let's plan on that, Greg. Let's do some more radio shows together, and
you got it.
We'll show both sides of the issue. Take care, my friend, and good luck
Greg,
with your new website.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You have an open invitation to come back anytime you like, and if Wild Bill frees up sometime down the future, we'll have ourselves a little round table.
All right, guys. You have a good night.
Thanks, Greg. Have a great night. And there you go. A lot of my listeners are thinking, they're not quite sure what to make of the gentleman, but it was interesting. But
well,
you know what?
Oh, I'll tell you, you need to get on, Kel. It's a young lady named Saba Ahmed, and she was on
you
the
know
Gotti,
what? She's
Gotti
been on my
me.
Mind, our
has
little
she?
Saba. Where is our little Muslima? I have not seen her on Love Block Talk Radio in ages. I wonder if she was whisked off into a forced marriage somewhere in the Middle East or... I had her on the show here about, it had to be about a year ago. Our little Saba.
Uh-huh.
Oh, she's such a sweetheart.
Yeah, she she was on Gotti's show and just telling about how wonderful Islam is and so on. And Gotti and I got to talking to her, and it turns out that she was in hiding because family wanted to, we're going to honor kill her because of her relationship with a man out in California. And it was hilarious. Here she is on a talk show supporting Islam and praising Islam while she's in hiding in fear for her life. But, you know, you got to love Saba.
She was running for politics or something, too. I can't remember what she was up to. She was running for politics. She ended up in the hospital due to a nervous breakdown as well. And this is what she claimed, is that, I had a nervous breakdown. Now, she did omit the fact that she was actually in fear for her life from her very family. Isn't she? Yeah, she's a real prize, this one.
Oh, she's entertaining, that's for sure. But anyway.
You know what? Yeah. And you know what? We're at the top of the hour, and I want to give you a chance to refresh your tea or coffee or whatever it is you like to do. Let the listeners stretch their legs and grab a beverage if you would like to do that. I'm just wondering, are you in the mood for a little Eric Clapton?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
All right. Well, you know what? Let's take a bit of a break. Give everybody a chance to, like I say, grab a beverage, and we'll see you all back here in 4 minutes. And neither can I. I can't stand it. I cannot stand the dimitude, the overwhelming amount of dimitude that is out there, not only amongst our politicians, the ones that we elect to protect us from the Islamic scourge, but the sleeping public who refuses to wake up and realize the threat that Islam represents to the West. And by the way, welcome back to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Cal Fritzy, with my guest, Wild Bill for America. And hey, Wild Bill, did you have a chance to get your old tea refreshed there?
Well, I like my iced coffee. I'm pretty proud of myself. I think I have perfected the Starbucks recipe for those iced coffees they sell in the convenience stores. I love those things, and now I don't have to pay $2 for them. It's like 15 cents a glass. I drink so much of it, though, I can't sleep at night.
I love iced coffee. Now I'm in the mood for an iced coffee, an iced cappuccino. There you go. When you were talking, my chat room was a little perplexed with Greg, and he's not here, and I'm certainly not going to say anything where he cannot defend himself, but I think he may be in a slight state of denial when it comes to the threat of Islam. And it's wonderful. It's wonderful that he brought up the example that, well, you know, I have Muslim neighbors and I have Muslim friends, and I'm just paraphrasing what he said. Greg, if you're listening in archive, my deepest apologies, and I know, don't keep saying I'm sorry. But it got me thinking, and I brought up something here, what he was saying about, well, you know, they're really great friends, they're super neighbors, they're pretty nice, they help the elderly, they'll shovel your walk in the winter. Yeah, that's all very well and fine. And when you brought up that, yeah, but look at the percentages, wait until it grows. In Canada here, our Islamic population is at 3.1. And Islam is the fastest growing religion in Canada. And that is because they have very, very bloated birth rates as well. So that could be part of it. But when you brought up the issue of percentages, it does worry me. And I was thinking to myself, yeah, I read an article about that from the Civilist Defenders, and that is the four stages of Islamic conquest. And you brought up so many great points when you were talking with Greg. And, of course, that is, you know, the stage one is infiltration that I came across, the migration wave of non-Muslim host countries, an appeal for humanitarian tolerance for the host society, attempt to portray Islam as a peaceful religion and Muslims as victims of misunderstanding and racism. And I love that one, racism. Things like that. But we slowly go down the list and we see what they're doing. They start to prophesize. They start to establish and recruit jihadi cells. We're seeing that in the United States, of course, in the West in general. We're seeing the efforts to convert alienated segments of the population to Islam, i.e. conversion, or as they call it, reverting, because, you know, we're all born Islamists, right, Bill? But we're seeing it all around us. Oh, yeah, according to Islam, we were all born Islamists. And what happened is that our parents didn't raise us right. They raised us in those evil religions like Christianity and Judaism. So when a person converts, they're not really converting. They're just reverting back to their true Islamic form.
Well, that means that we're all apostates then.
That's right. That's why they have to slay us wherever they find us. But I don't know. Like, you read these articles and things like that, the stage two, the consolidation of power, I think we're seeing that, well, in the very White House with the likes of Keith Ellison, Eric Holder, and what's her name? The one who's married to, what's his name? Carlos Dangerous, Abba Abedin. Or Uma Abedin?
Uma. The White House is crawling with devout Muslims. And I think we need to wrap our heads around the idea, Kel, that America is going to have to suffer some serious pain before the citizens are going to wake up. We've been trying to wake them up for several years now, and we just can't seem to get them away from Honey Boo Boo long enough to go to the voting booth or to take a stand. So my personal opinion is that we are going to have to let this run its course. You know, this terminal liberalism is like a cancer in America, and Well, let's not call it cancer. Let's call it more like a bad case of malaria. We're just going to have to ride it out. And until Americans start becoming hurt by the policies themselves, we're not going to have an effective army. So this is why it's so important that people like you and I continue to speak out through the digital media and Joe Dan Media, Joe Dan Baker, Intellectual Frog Legs, Joe Dan Gorman. And, yeah, because we're going to have to wait patiently for Americans to wake up and realize that their country is on fire, and sooner or later they're going to come to us because we are going to have to do some rebuilding. And so as I talk to people all over the country, and I see and hear discouragement in them, but I keep telling them that we're on the right side, we're doing good work, we have to continue on, and we have to be patient until America, the U.S., and Canada suffers enough pain to where people say, okay, that's it, we've had enough, let's fix it. What do you think?
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. And there's a lot of the same sentiment out there amongst the various infidels that are trying to educate about what exactly Islam is. And it's in our backyards, and we're trying to explain to them what is going on, and they still don't seem to listen. And a lot of them also say, what's it going to take, another 9/11? Well, I don't know. I don't know what it will take to make people aware of the fact that Islam is a real threat, but all I know is that if I don't do something, my children will never forgive me. My grandchildren will never know the difference. This is what I'm trying to avoid. We are at such a... Oh, go ahead.
One thing we do need to do is avoid the technical talk. You know, we talk about Sharia and Taqiyya and dhimmis and all this stuff and the theological differences. And the vast majority of Americans just tune it out. They don't want to hear that. They are addicted to emotional thrills. That's, you know, what reality TV is all about and so on. Mm. Americans are addicted to being entertained. So what I want to see our side do is address it in ways that fire up the human heart. This is why I do videos about Muslims poisoning pet dogs, about the rape of children, the beating of women, throwing acid in women's faces, the honor killing of young teenage girls. We need to couch our argument in terms that will ignite the passions of the American people.
The thing is, though, a lot of the people in the West, they see that they see what happens when there is a person in the Netherlands who tries to make a film exposing Islam for what it is. Theo van Gogh, of course, is whom I'm referring. We saw him slaughtered in the streets by an Islamist who opposed that film that he made. Geert Wilders also made a film, and I'm always interchanging the two, but I know that Submission and Fitna, both of them were highly criticized, not only within the Islamic community, but by the dimitude of the West in general. And we saw what happened to Theo van Gogh, and we see what's happening with Geert Wilders today, in that when you speak out against Islam, watch out for that fatwa coming down on you. And we know what's happening with Geert Wilders. Well, he lives in safe house after safe house after safe house. He sleeps in a different place every night because the Islamists are totally gunning for him. This is a politician who is standing up for his Freedom Party. They're trying to stand up and save the Netherlands. He's trying to save his country, and this is the thanks he gets. He has no support whatsoever.
Oh, he has millions of people supporting him, but they're all people on the right, and he is opposed by the liberal left, the media.
That's
and
what
so
I
on.
Mean.
The useful idiots. Yeah, the useful idiots are...
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But you know, one of these days...
His own won't help him. Yeah.
Geert Wilders is going to be hailed as an international hero. The history books will show him as a man of great courage. He is the Patrick Henry of our time. And we just need to stay the course and be patient, and sooner or later the world will see that we have engaged in a heroic battle against the forces of evil in the modern time. And I am proud to be on the right side. And if anybody has any question about which side is right and wrong, just go to my YouTube videos under Wild Bill for America and look at some of the filthy, threatening, hateful comments that come from the opponents of my videos.
I've read them, yeah. And ladies and gentlemen, in my chat room, and for those who will listen and archive later, I have the links that you can go to right in the show highlights there. So please visit the not only the YouTube channel, but also please visit Wild Bill's website. Fantastic, informative stuff in there. And you're right, though. I do believe that Geert Wilders will be hailed as the hero one day. There's another politician across the pond that I have a lot of faith in, and that is Paul Weston. And I've actually spoken with him in the past, and he has his Liberty Great Britain Party going on there, and he seems to be garnering a lot of support from the populace. But like I say, these gentlemen fighting so hard to preserve the integrity of their own countries, and they're met with ridicule and derision by the very people that should be
thanking them, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, take heart, because the human spirit is tuned for heroes. People are starved for heroic men and women who will stand up with great courage and be the David taking on the Goliath that is threatening the world. And we're going to see human hearts turning towards these brave people as we expose them and reveal them to the world. So the liberal left, with their politically correct wimpiness, you know, nobody respects a wimp, but everybody respects a man and woman of courage, even if they're on the wrong side. You know, sometimes you just have to admire the people that take a stand against all odds. And we are going to see sooner or later a great turning of the human heart to support the heroes and to take a stand against evil. I am absolutely confident of that.
Oh, yes, and like I say, Paul Weston is that totally has my support. I don't know if you ever had a chance to see this on YouTube, but he made a video, and it's called My Name is Paul Weston, and I Am a Racist. And this was him addressing the issue of Islam within Great Britain and what he's trying to do about it. And every time he tries to bring attention to the threat, he's called a racist. I am getting very tired of that label, because it's falling very flat now. There is nothing that they can say to convince me that I'm doing what I'm doing, and my intentions are nothing more than nothing less than honorable. But if they want to throw labels at me, then fine, I'm a racist. What can I say? If you want to call me a racist Islamist, fine, go ahead. But it falls, like I say, it falls flat. There's no meaning in it for me.
And that's the only weapon they have, is name calling at this point. They absolutely cannot bring facts against our arguments, because they don't have any. So, and more and more people are getting sick and tired of the race card. You know, you're right. It is falling flat all over the country, definitely.
Oh, well, and Islamophobes. I'm not Islamophobic. Please stop calling me an Islamophobe. If anything, I'm Islamo-fed up.
I like that. And the other side is they are Islamophiliacs. They are in love with Islam. Yeah. Yeah. Joe Dan Gorman says Islamophobia. He says, I ain't afraid of Islam. He says, I'm afraid of getting my head cut off.
Oh, yeah. It just throws me every single time, I swear. But I am always left with a burning question, and I'm always pondering this. Like I say, this is what I pretty much do this 24/7. I have my blog, I have the radio show here, I have a Facebook page. Infidels are watching. I'm busy with all this stuff. I'm reading books like you wouldn't believe. I'm reading about CARE, the Muslim Mafia inside the world of CARE right now. And that is really opening my eyes about what I refer to as the business suit jihadist. Like, we have the kinetic violent jihadist, and they're pretty much manageable to a point, except, of course, when they lie to us, when they're farmers by day and they're jihadists by night. But I think the true threat to America and the West in general are the business suit jihadists, and these are the types like the Council of American Islamic Relations, these people running around waging influence, even to the point where they are writing manuals on sensitivity training for the FBI to use. This is a threat to me that I feel is very much more salient at some points than the violent kinetic jihadists. What do you think about that, Bill?
I absolutely agree with you. That is a terrible threat to our national security, allowing the propaganda wing of Islamic terrorists to write the training manuals for American law enforcement officers. Now, one of the questions I get as I travel around the country is, will America's military and law enforcement turn on the American citizens if they are ordered to do so by a corrupt administration?
Yeah.
And for years I have said, nope, they will not, because I know those people. I served with them. They know the Constitution. And I didn't really have a concern, but I'm not so quick to say that anymore, because as the liberal corruption continues to poison our system, we're going to see the attitude of law enforcement shift slowly from public service to public control. You know, we're already beginning to see some incidents along that line. This is why I'm a member of Oath Keepers, and I just spoke at their Oath Keeper rally up in Idaho.
Fantastic.
Oath Keepers is an organization that calls law enforcement and military to stand by their oath to defend the Constitution and not obey illegal orders like detaining citizens without cause or confiscating firearms or blockading cities. So there's a lot of good things happening, and I anticipate that CARE will one day be thrown out on their propagandist butts once Americans do wake up. I've debated CARE in some of the liberal churches down here in Florida, and frankly, I am not impressed with those smiling snake oil salesmen.
There is there are so many CARE, like Florida in particular, seems to be having a lot of issues with the CARE peoples, as they were. I don't know what to call them, but and his name is slipping me. I had him right on the tip of my brain, and the name ran away on me again. But there was that one particular person belonging to CARE, and they were the ones that were trying to have they were trying to institute Sharia law. And Florida said no, and they were trying to appeal it, and they were using the arguments that you're racist and Islamophobe. And I wish I had his name back in the front of my brain. But this guy is a real rabble-rouser all the same. And he runs around. He's the one that United West caught on tape talking about
blatant racism.
Yeah.
What's his name? Tom Trento, Nemesis. I can't think of a name.
Yeah, I can't. I know. It was right on the tip of my brain, and he ran away on me. Otherwise, I would have just kept my big mouth shut here. I hate it when that happens.
Let's just call him Fidel.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good idea. You know what? You just triggered me on something else, and I'm going to do a 180 on you. And I really, but I really need your help on this. I really need your opinion. Nido Hassan, Fort Hood shooter trial.
Yeah.
Why on earth is this guy still around? I mean, he postponed the trial for, what, 4 years? It's got to be about 4 years that he postponed the trial because he would not suit up in a military tribunal. He grew his beard and everything else. He's admitted he's the shooter. He's trying to defend himself in court. However, under military trial, he cannot plead guilty because that would, of course, ensure a death penalty. But that's what he wants. He wants to be a martyr. Now, my question to you, because you're a military man, how on earth was it that this man could get away with what he was doing for so long? There were so many warning signs. There were so many people saying, look, this guy is up to something, and we've got to keep an eye on him. For goodness sake, his business cards had SOA on the bottom of them, Soldier of Allah. that was not a red flag right there to investigate this guy. And all of a sudden, he just went crazy, and it was an act of workplace violence, according to Obama. How
yeah.
is it that we these people get in this way? He got in through the back door, and he snickered us all big time.
Yeah, well, he was a medical doctor, which gave him excellent credentials. The military is always looking for good doctors.
Mm.
And let me correct you on one thing, though, Kel, is that Hassan has no authority to delay that trial for 4 years. The judge would push it through if they thought that he was dragging his feet to delay the case.
Oh, okay.
Now, only the Obama administration could have caused this to drag on for so long. You know, the defendant has a right to a speedy trial, and so does the U.S. government. If Hassan could drag it out for 4 years, everybody charged with an offense would be dragging their trial out for 4 years. So, no, this was definitely interference by the Obama administration.
Brilliant. And it figures as well. A lot of people say, pardon me, he murdered 13 people and wounded over 30, but he actually murdered 14 people because one of those victims, she was pregnant. So he murdered 14 people, and he wounded over 30.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's time for him to be sent to the ultimate Supreme Court of the universe and let him plead his case before God Almighty. And that'll be
absolutely.
Short conversation. Yeah, yeah.
This is the thing. I'm very hard-nosed. I'm very hard-nosed when it comes to Islam, and I make no bones about that. I despise Islam. I despise everything about it. I wish that we had never seen it. I wish Muhammad's mother had rolled over one night and said, "No, dear, I have a headache." My goal is to, I don't believe in any reformation, and I really get sick and tired of the Zudi Jasters out there trying to tell us that it can be reformed. No, Islam will not be reformed. It certainly won't be reformed in my lifetime. And I would just as soon see it either eradicated or totally banned as a hate religion and see the Quran banned as hate literature. I don't see that happening. But there are things that I think that should be done. And, of course, like I just cited, recognizing that Islam is a dangerous entity and it is a threat to the West. And if we have to come down with some sort of proposition that would protect the people in the West, so be it. And one thing I would like to see is that Muslims not be allowed to enlist in the military, not be allowed to be appointed to offices of sensitivity like we're seeing right now in the White House. However, of course, that would be a big fail because, of course, all these lobby groups, they would come out and they would say that, well, you can't do that because that's racist and that's we're going back to the internment camps of World War II with the Japanese. But I think there's a lot of credibility behind what I'm proposing that we can do, and there's no reason why we can't protect ourselves. We know there's a threat. The Islam is a threat, but trying to convince those that have the influence to make amendments to this threat seems to be beyond our reach. Don't you think someday, Bill, that you're just banging your head?
Yeah, sometimes, but we do have the teeth necessary to put an end to the Islamic threat. There is no law that says we have to allow immigrants who are seditious. And here's the United States Code Title 18 on sedition. Listen to this. If two or more persons conspire to overthrow, put down, or destroy by force the government of the United States or to levy war against them or to oppose by force the authority thereof, or by force to prevent, hinder, or delay the execution of any law, they shall be fined and imprisoned not more than 20 years. That is the law of the United States. And when you think about it, that is Islam. It goes on to talk about those who write plans to overthrow the United States. And, man, the Islamic imams, they are preaching and talking about the overthrow of the U.S. through jihad. So we have all the legal teeth we need to stop Islamic immigration. We just need a Congress that has the huevos to do their duty.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a lot that we can do. And I wanted to refer to an article that was written by a person named Tim Burton, and he's actually MCAT, and he has a website called Freedom Loving Infidel. He wrote a wonderful article, and it was he was actually discussing in defense of the English Defense League. But he took some very, very good bullet points from Sion that stopped the Islamicization of nations. And they put towards some proposals that I thought were reasonable, but like I say, I'm a hardcore infidel. But they did bring up some rather interesting proposals to curtail the Islamic scourge. For example, implementing the profiling of Muslims at airports and hiring in professions which national security and public safety could be compromised, immediate investigation into foreign mosque funding in the West, and for new legislation making foreign funding of mosques in non-Muslim nations illegal. Things like that we could do. Surveil the mosques and have regular inspections of mosques. And by all means, do not let CARE know when you're investigating a mosque. We saw what happened when the FBI did that. There was one particular mosque, I believe it was around the Chicago area, and the FBI, out of courtesy, they went to CARE and said, look, we think there's something really funny going on in this mosque, and so we're going to go in and take a look. Here's the date and the time we'll be doing it. Well, sure enough, CARE turns around, and they inform the mosque, guess what's happening? That mosque was cleared out. By the time the FBI got there, all they found were dust bunnies. And the FBI, they were furious because they knew that CARE tipped off the imam and the mosque itself.
It's probably a good thing that happened. The FBI learned a valuable lesson. Well, there's one entity, Kel, that is standing in the way of us accomplishing all of this, and that is the United States Congress. Until they are more afraid of the American voters than they are of the left-wing media, they will not do their duty. You and I and the concerned people of Canada and the USA, we have a duty to take down the propaganda media. The government has no authority to act against them. We are the only ones that can do it. And as far as investigating mosques and so on, we as citizens have the authority to conduct investigations. I have several friends, ladies, who do undercover investigations in mosques. And they are free to gather intel just like anybody else. And they are not bound by search warrants or anything like that. Search warrants are only applied when the government is investigating somebody.
Oh, I see.
In fact, I'm going to be working with a couple of these people to develop a training program for, well, it's ladies right now who are working as undercover agents investigating mosques and Islamic activity, but I don't see any reason why we wouldn't open that up to men as well.
Yep, absolutely. And I can't disagree with that. We have to start engaging in these measures, and we can't afford to be reactive anymore, Bill. We have to start taking what we have and running with it. And like I say, these proposals, they certainly don't seem unreasonable. There are things in here that can be implemented, and they should be implemented. We should be engaging in immediate cancellation of citizenship or permanent residency status for anyone who leaves the country of his residence, for example, to travel for the purpose of engaging in jihad activity. And we know that they are. We saw what happened with the Boston Bomber Brothers. We knew that they were over there in the Caucasus and that they were engaging in Islamic activities. We knew that they were engaging in jihad. Russia even warned the United States, look, keep an eye out for these two. They're up to no good, and they're coming back your way. Of course, the Obama administration conveniently ignored that, and we saw what happened in April, didn't we?
That's right. And it's unfortunate that it happened in Boston, because I can tell you that if those two bombers had pulled a stunt like that up in northern Idaho, we would not have seen the police kicking in doors trying to find these guys, because it would have been a race to see who got them first, the sheriff or the citizens. And chances are those two bombers would have been delivered to the sheriff in the back of a pickup truck wrapped in duct tape and with several .45 caliber puncture wounds.
Oh, absolutely. We always we seem to get a lot of warning signs that there is something afoot. There's a threat out there. There is something going on, but it always seems to get swept under the carpet or it seems to get ignored. Like I say, when the FBI found out that CARE tipped off this particular mosque, they cut off all sorts. They cut off their ties with CARE after that. I am wondering, like, what we know about the Council of American Islamic Relations, for example, and their involvement as an unindicted conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation trial, we know that they are nothing more than a Muslim Brotherhood front group. I don't even think they try to hide it anymore, Bill. I think that we're here and we don't care because we're using your very laws against you.
They don't need to hide it anymore. There's enough useful idiots who just flat don't care. And I have no problem with using some of these laws that they try to use against us, against them. For instance, the hate speech laws, you know, that they're trying to shove on us to stop us from criticizing Islam. Well, let's take a look at some of the public statements that Islam has made, and let's ram it right back down their throats and
you
threaten
bet.
Them with it. You're right.
And
we have
to let
stop.
Just to let you know, we have another caller who would like to have a word with you. He's been sitting here. He just raised his hand.
Okay.
I wasn't sure if he was just listening, but he or she just raised their hand, so I'll bring them on right now. And 780, hi, welcome to the Red Fox Blogger. What's your name, and do you have a question or comment for Bill?
Oh, I have lots of comments, and I also have a question. What do you know about the 9/11 march with the Muslims on D.C.?
I've heard that there's going to be a million Muslim march on Washington, D.C. I don't know if they're going to be able to pull that off or not. It's one of those things where we just have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Have any of you guys, you're both very knowledgeable on the things of the Islam and that, but have you ever come across Sam Solomon?
Come across what?
A guy named Sam Solomon.
Oh, no, I'm not familiar with Sam Solomon.
Yeah, well, you can Google things on him. He talked about the Muslim demographics, and he was an imam that converted to Christianity. Yeah.
That name is actually ringing a bell, the study on the Muslim demographics, and that's what Bill was referring to earlier in the program, and the percentages that come up. Is that?
Yeah,
and you know what? I don't want to call you caller. Do you have a name?
Oh, yeah, Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
Hello.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I just don't want to be saying, yeah, thanks, caller. Hi, caller. Bye, caller. There you go. But, yeah, the name Solomon, it is ringing a bell. I'm very familiar with some of the demographic studies that I believe that he is responsible for, Kathy.
I don't know if he actually did the demographics on it, but he's a very bright man, and I listened to him talk at Trinity Western University in D.C. a few years back. But he knows exactly what Islam is about and can say it both in Islamic and can say it in English to people about what's coming down the line for us.
And you're in the United States, right?
No, Canada.
No.
You're in Canada.
Yeah, I heard her say a boot. Yeah, she said a boot.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That gives it away.
A boot. There you go, Kathy. Do you when you see what's happening in Europe and now what seems to be happening in the United States? What's your opinion about anything happening in Canada? I'm seeing noises being made all the time. It's very. I get a little disconcerted, especially with Prime Minister Stephen Harper and the former immigration minister, Jason Kenney, trying to make changes in reformation of immigration. Do you think that Canada and the United States and the West in general, that we should be paying closer attention to our immigration policies? Should we be allowing people from the Middle East into Canada in particular? Because we seem to have the highest immigration rates of Islamists per capita in the world. And Canada, we're now sitting at 3.1% of Islamics in Canada. Do you see anything coming down the road? Right now, at this point, it seems rather quiet to me. But are you seeing in your area, for example, in your personal life, are you seeing things that would give you cause for concern?
Okay, just from looking out, and I'm kind of a person who observes things, definitely more Muslim people in my city and things, and around in the areas that I'm traveling and things. I try to engage them in conversation as much as possible. I try to give them the gospel. I try to talk to them mm-hmm. about what is the truth and what is false. And I do pray for Muslim people to be converted, because I think that's our real hope. God is much more powerful than a lot of our efforts, right? So anyways, in talking with some of these people, some of the women say to me that they're very happy to be in Canada because of their protection and the freedom that they have here. I also talk with a lot with different people who have converted from Islam to become Christians. I hand out a lot of their testimonies to Muslim people because it's written in Arabic, and they're curious about a white girl handing them a Arabic pamphlet here in Edmonton. And
wonderful.
Anyways, yeah. So that's I do see it, and I also have strong concern that someone pledges allegiance in our country to support the things that our country is about, and then turns around once they've done that and works against the country. So I do have concern about traitors and sedition.
Absolutely. And you called in to speak with Wild Bill, so I'm going to pass you back to him.
Oh, I can talk with anyone, but
I salute you for doing your track ministry. That is vitally important. I'd love to have 1,000 more people doing that. And I would also like to see more petitions that the citizens can sign, you know, giving their opinion on what should be done with immigration laws. Because it's pretty clear that our governments are not going to take essential action. And I would like to start gathering the citizens to speak their opinions. What do you think about that?
Well, number one, our immigration guy is, as Kel said, former. So he's our former immigration guy. So I don't know who they have up and coming. Harper has been doing things to protect our country, and I think he's very much aware of many different threats from global and within the country itself. You know, so I do think, you know, they are aware of it, and they will respond on it. In fact, talking with the RCMP up here, they say that a lot of times the funding that happens in mosques, and they're sending it off to countries to so-called help Muslims in other countries, they lose track of where that money goes once it leaves Canada. So, you know, if we can have people who know the network and can inform the right people, that would be a good thing.
Hmm. Well, I'm looking at the Canada law on sedition, and it looks really promising for being able to do something. It says, anyone who teaches or advocates or publishes or circulates any writing that advocates the use without the authority of law of force as a means of accomplishing a governmental change in Canada. Man, that's all the teeth you need to build some sedition cases, and I would recommend that as part of a plea deal, that you get these people to renounce their citizenship and go back to the country they came from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry, where are you getting that from?
It's on yourlaws.ca. It's
okay.
Canadian Criminal Code, Section 59.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that is absolutely fantastic that they're doing that. There's a lot of people concerned, though, that there's a lot that Canada is trying to do under the conservative Stephen Harper government, and of course they're being met with a blowback about, well, you cannot do that, that is racist, and that's discriminatory, but these things have to be done in the very near future. We are at a critical juncture in that we have to start, like I say, being proactive.
Well, let me throw this out. You have full access to the Canadian laws, so for instance, Section 59 that I just read. What if people started gathering the written documents of Islam that clearly violate this law and start presenting it to the prosecutors, demanding that they do their job?
Okay. Well, interesting. I do have people in the ministry for people who used to be Muslim who became Christian. That might be a place to start.
Yeah, because down here in the we can force a prosecution if we have evidence of a crime, and if the prosecutor refuses to take it, they can be charged with malfeasance of duty. So this is an area that the T-teams are beginning to explore as a possible tool to get control of this situation. That, and let's not be shy about shoving God and country right back down their throats when they come at us with their secular humanism and false religions. I think every problem that our two countries are facing can be traced directly to walking away from God's principles as laid out in His Word. And you know what? Because God said so is a perfectly legitimate political argument.
Amen.
And I want to start throwing that right back at the liberal left, complete with scriptures to back it up, because there's a lot of people who their hearts resound when they hear the scripture. Oh, if it's from the Bible, it must be true. And we need to start getting the scriptures out there more and more and more.
I have a question for both of you. And Bill, you jogged my memory about this. And you're right that, and Kathy, you're right as well in that we have to start getting things on paper. We have to start sharing what the Islamists are up to and what they themselves are putting on paper. I thought perhaps the explanatory memorandum from the Muslim Brotherhood would do that, their clear agenda on the world caliphate. And Bill, I'll start with you. What do you think about the explanatory memorandum or the Muslim Brotherhood manifesto and their clear intentions on conquering the West via the caliphate?
I think they just violated the sedition laws of both Canada and the USA.
Yep. Bingo.
Let's take it and run with it.
Yeah, that's right.
It's
interesting. When I talked to people who were on the street in Egypt in this last little while, and they're basically saying the Muslim Brotherhood is a very small amount, but based on what they're seeing in the media here, you think it's fairly large, but it's a very small amount of people that are in that. And the rest of the people are wanting, you know, what's happening to happen. That's been happening right now to happen. They don't want the Muslim Brotherhood there. And people from Iran, they basically are concerned the cost of meat that goes on the table. They're not concerned about bombs and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the people on the street are talking about.
Yeah. And the argument I always hear is that, well, it's their problem. It's not my problem. Well, pretty soon it's going to be everybody's problem. And you're right, Kathy, is that they're more concerned. And Bill, like Bill brought up too earlier, that people are more concerned about the Kardashians and their weight gain and the Amazing Race, and they're more concerned about the price of groceries in the supermarket. Now, you know, the former is just absolute hogwash, and it's a waste of my brain when something comes across my daily and I open it up and there's a Kardashian sister in there or something. People should be concerned, though, of course, about their vitality and the prices of gasoline and the prices of groceries, but they also have to be concerned about, they have to have a sense of self-awareness around them, and that what there is a world out there, and they have their children they have to protect. They have to expand the horizon of awareness and include Islam as a threat within that purview of their existence, because it really is. And Kathy, I don't know if you have children, but there was, for example, we have to be aware of what they're teaching our kids in school. There was a textbook that came out of Florida not too long ago. 36 some odd pages were devoted to teaching about Islam, the religion of peace. No other religions were included in that textbook, and kids would be coming home and they're reading this. Our public schools are filling our kids with nonsense.
Yep. You know, back in the early 80s, a guy named Ronald Cook wrote a book in Ireland, and it was about the irredentism, about the... basically the use of the birth control to drop the population and the use of no population control in South American countries in order to increase that population, and then to introduce drugs into that population to force the people out of that population to move into the northern population of the United States, right? And and they, in the year 2000, he was predicting in the year 2000, and it did happen, that predominantly he used to be Protestant, English-speaking, became majority Spanish-speaking Catholics, right? And irredentism is something that the Islam is using and have used for many years. And if you check out that thing on the demographics, you'll see that at a certain point the demographics will go up because we're having 1.32 or 2.3 children and they're having 8. And at a certain point it hits a place where it skyrockets and there's no catching it. And at that point they control, they're in everything and they control everything by population.
Exactly, and that's the my umbrella article that I was reciting earlier in the program is the four stages of Islam and Islamic infiltration. I don't know what stage we're at right now. We're seeing, I reckon that we're probably, according to what I'm reading here, is that we're fast approaching stage three, and they are starting to engage in an open war. And that is the intentional efforts to undermine the host governments and culture, acts of barbarity to intimidate citizens. Well, we're seeing that. And Kathy, you and I as Canadians, we saw that stark example with the Shafia mass honor killings. We're seeing things like that. Open and covert efforts to cause economic collapse of the society. We're seeing that. Opposition is challenged and either eradicated or silenced. We're seeing that. We're seeing mass execution of non-Muslims, not here yet, but who knows when that will be coming. We're seeing the imposition of Sharia law. We're getting to a very close tipping point here in North America and, of course, in England and Europe in general.
Now, apparently on Wall Street there is a whole section of money that works in Wall Street, basically governed by Sharia law. So you can't kind of use the money unless you are of that of that stock, right?
And just to let you know, I am down to, close to my last 10 minutes, but Kathy, do you have any final comments for Bill before I let you go?
No, just hello and keep up the good work on your side, too.
Thank you, Kathy. It's good talking to you. You're very encouraging.
All right.
You
okay.
Are.
Have a good night.
Kathy, thank you very, very much. Please feel free to call back again.
Yeah, it was a very interesting program.
Thank
to
you.
Listen to. Okay, thanks.
Thanks. And she brings up some very salient points. I'd like to have a chat with that lady one day, just her and me, and pick her brain a little more because she brought up some really good points. And yeah, enlightening. And this is what we do, huh, Bill, is that we all connect, we all get together, we all put our heads together, and we all come up with some ideas, solutions, insights, and other places that we can visit and explore. And, Bill,
exactly.
I am going – yeah. Oh, go ahead.
And the fact that the digital media is now surpassing television in influencing the people of our countries – We can be really encouraged. We are making a difference, Kel. And one of the reasons I brought Greg in, you know, as my opponent, is that we need to invite more people of opposing opinions to take part in these broadcasts. It's fun. It's entertaining. And this may be the only chance they have to get the truth. So I'm gonna be reaching out and trying to bring in more people from the left to actually call into these shows, you know, you and Gotti and so on, and let's make it more of a ministry outreach, a ministry of truth, so to speak.
Oh, absolutely, and I would encourage everybody to listen to all the programs here. Like, I endorse BTR because, well, I'm part of the BTR family, but there are programs out there that everybody can listen to. You can listen to Radio Jihad Network 7 days a week, and Gadi Edelman, of course, he's part of that team, and you can hear him Thursdays at 8 p.m. And I do strongly encourage you to try to go back a week yesterday and listen to Gadi Adelman and his take on the truth about Benghazi and how it is full of holes. And that was a CNN report. I encourage you all to do that. And if you really want to know what's going on in Europe, England in particular, listen to the East Anglian ZDO radio show. They'll tell you what's going on. They know what's going on. They're drowning in the Islamization of England. They will they'll scare you.
I spent a summer in England, and I was headed to Hyde Park. I wanted to meet a guy named Jay Smith. He has a every Saturday he meets with the Muslims in Hyde Park, and he debates them from Bible. And he has to be surrounded by British police because, you know, it's a hostile crowd. But he just takes them on every weekend. And I wanted to meet him, so I was walking down towards Hyde Park when four Muslim evangelists called me over to the street corner and says, come, let me tell you about the religion of peace. So I walked up, I said, tell me about the religion of peace. And he says, when you come to Islam, all of your mental problems disappear. When you become a Muslim, all of your financial difficulties are taken care of, and blah, 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 blah. And then he says, and Jesus predicted the coming of Muhammad. And I said, well, now, wait a minute there, pal, because I know my New Testament. And I pulled my New Testament out of my pocket, and he was not at all happy to see that. So I read to him the scripture that he was referring to, and it clearly had nothing to do with Muhammad. Well, he just kept right on talking over me, but probably 18 or 20 British citizens had stopped to watch this debate on the sidewalk, and I don't know how this guy got on the topic, but all of a sudden he was talking about, and science has proven that your fingers do not remove the bacteria, or that toilet paper does not remove the bacteria, but your fingers do, because, you know, that is the Muslim way. Muhammad did not use toilet paper. So they, devout Muslims, do not use it today. And I just shut up at that point because, you know, Napoleon said, never interrupt your enemy when he's making a mistake. And I looked around, and I could see that he was not making any converts that day from those proper British people. And I never did get to meet Jay, but I will never forget debating this Muslim on a street corner in London. And so they... sometimes we just have to let them talk, you know, let people see what they're all about.
And that's how you do it, is that you just let, they'll hang themselves on their own petard eventually, and people will figure it out. It sounds like this is exactly what this fellow is up to as well. But I am down to the end of the show. Where did the time go, Bill?
I really enjoyed this show tonight. You really do a good job moderating.
Oh, thank you. Oh, will you come back? You know what? Tom Trento wants to come back.
Oh, he's good, yeah. Yeah, Trento and Pam Geller and I are supposed to be working on some video boot camps to help train our
sidekicks.
So
yeah,
going to be working on that. I'm not sure when it's going to come together because we're all so busy, but it's in the works.
That's wonderful. As a matter of fact, and I've been bragging about this all week now, I'm making my friends not only sick, but I'm making them sick with envy as well, is that I will be meeting Pamela Geller and Robert Spencer on September 17th in Toronto.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Good people.
They're coming up here, and the theme of their talk is going to be the dangers of Islamic extremism and Western complacency. So it should be a very fascinating conference.
Well, make sure you tease Pam, because tell her that Wild Bill for America is still allowed in England, and she's banned.
she is going to be hot on that. That just absolutely infuriated me. Oh, my goodness. But you know what? I will.
Yeah. Throw that at her there. So, and I would like to get some of your listeners' comments on the videos. You know, if you'd send them to see my videos at www.wildbillforamerica.com, please send some comments there. Let the people down here know that the Canadians are standing with us as we take a stand, and we need to join forces and march arm in arm, so to speak.
I will do that. Like I say, that I have been this is my cause. Benghazi is my cause. It's not my cause du jour. I have like 14 million of them. But Benghazi is really, it's always eaten at me, Bill. It's always stayed with me. And I'm not giving up until we get the absolute truth as to what happened. I don't think we're getting it. Personally, Greg was very nice in his approach and everything. He was polite about it, but I think that he's missing the big picture in that essentially we're being lied to.
Yeah,
of course.
Well, have me on again. We'll talk more about the special committee.
Absolutely,
versus
and you know what? I have your home number.
That's right.
I have your home number, so I can give you a call.
Okay.
But
we'll
I would love to have you back on the program. This has been probably the fastest 2 hours I have ever spent. I could spend like 4 hours with you.
Okay. Well, we will do this again. We will cover this more thoroughly, and let's do some good work together, Kel.
You better believe it, Bill. That we will do. And look, you have yourself a most fantastic weekend. Have wonderful dreams about British Columbia.
That's more of a fantasy, I think. But yeah, right now I'm going to go in the kitchen. I'm going to cook me up a great big pork steak in honor of our Muslim show tonight. And
yay!
I look forward to hearing from you.
Oh, I will be in touch with you. I will definitely give you a call just to shoot the breeze and see how it's all going.
Thank you very much. You
Bill,
have a good audience. I will
thanks
talk to
all
you
mine.
Soon.
Thank
God
you so very much.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night, Bill. I'll talk to you soon. And ladies and gentlemen, of course, that was my guest, Wild Bill for America, and I actually can honestly refer to as my friend. We are out there. We're doing great works. We are bringing awareness to you. We are trying to educate you one person, one voice at a time, and we are pleased that you are listening to what we have to say. This is so very important that please listen to our voices, listen to what we're telling you, listen to what we're trying to educate you on, and just share it. Islam is a true threat to the West. You listen to Wild Bill for 2 hours. You listen to what he had to say. You listen to some of the callers. Well, Greg, okay, but Greg, you're welcome to call back. You know that. Just educate yourselves about the threat that Islam represents. And please do something, because if you don't, your children will never forgive you and your grandchildren will never know the difference. It is mass Islamity. Stop the insanity. Ladies and gentlemen, have a wonderful weekend. I will see you here Monday afternoon at 3 p.m., where my guest will be Tim Burton, a.k.a. the loving infidel, the freedom-loving infidel. He will be my guest here Monday afternoon at 3 p.m., so make sure you tune in and join me then, okay? Bye-bye. I'll see you then.